All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on the 18th floor of 303 Wacker, overlooking beautiful downtown Chicago. And we're going to be talking about 9/11 in general, where we were, what we remember about it, and all that stuff. And, you know, where we were during other events, during other, you know, huge events, and sharing those memories. Now, one person who has an exceptional story about where he was when 9/11 attacks took place is in studio right now. He's a world-renowned hypnotist, Larry Garrett, and he's the operator of the oldest and largest hypnosis center in Chicago and the author of Healing the Enemy and Hypnotizing the Devil, and that details the experience that he had being in Iraq on September 11th. Brought there to hypnotize Saddam Hussein's son. And that is Larry Garrett. Larry, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Nick. I'm honored to be here.
It's been a couple of years since you've been down here.
Yeah, year before last.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So welcome back.
Thank you.
And these are our new studios.
Oh, I heard you mention a green room. That's a valuable room.
Can
you imagine having an apartment there?
Could you imagine that? Yeah. The PPG paints. It is beautiful. Yeah. It's great. It's all of us. Every time the guests come here, they go into the PPG paint.
When Dan brought me out there, I says, "Woo, what
a
room."
Yeah. It's fancy stuff up here. Yeah. So, well, welcome.
Thank you.
First of all, let's go back to the beginning. When did you start in hypnosis? And what sort of led you to that?
Both good questions. I started actually my first training in 1968.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, I started doing
hypnosis. That's 50 years.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And I started full-time practice in 1970.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been a love of mine ever since. It's over half my life. I was 12 when I started.
And, you look good.
Thanks. And I started because I was just at a conference. There was a hypnotist. I sort of thought it was a crock, you know, and he picked up on it. And he said, "Oh, this guy's an easy one." So at that time, I had a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress. I used to have headaches. I had bleeding ulcers. You know, my life wasn't very easy.
Yeah.
So the guy hypnotized me. After I opened my eyes, I thought, something's wrong, because nothing was wrong.
Well, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that kind of just like flipped my mind into, what did this guy do? And that's how I started.
Yeah. And it was just, was it immediately after the first time?
The first time I was hypnotized, I didn't even think I was hypnotized. I'm sitting there saying, I'm not hypnotized. I could open my eyes anytime I want. I could open my eyes. When I opened my eyes, there was something different. And today, when I sit with my clients, I'll say to them, how do you want to feel when you walk out the door?
Mm-hmm.
And that's our goal. So our goal isn't like you're going to quit smoking, you're going to lose weight, you're going to jump off bridges. Our goal is, how do you want to feel? So everything is about, if I feel more confident, I could do anything. And hypnosis just neutralizes the angst.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it does.
And you started the wellness center and the hypnosis center in 70?
Yes, 1970.
And has it always been on Kimball? Or
No, I've had three locations.
Oh, okay.
No, I didn't move around. My last location before Kimball was 25 years. And Kimball, I've been there 20 years now.
How big a staff do you have?
About 30 people, but that's not all staff there. What we have is we have about 11 hypnotists there.
Okay.
We have massage therapists. We have Reiki. We have acupuncture. We have Rolfing, which is a manipulation of the body tissue.
Mm-hmm.
So we have other alternative wellness. We don't have any traditional medicine, just alternative wellness.
Just the alternative wellness.
Yoga classes, things like that.
Yeah.
But we have about 4,000 square feet. I'm really proud of our building. It's old triangle building. I think they call them flat irons in New York.
Yeah.
And it's just a beautiful place. Used to be an old neighborhood bar.
3020 North Kimball. Yeah. So that's like Diversey?
Between Diversey and Belmont, right in the middle.
Right in the middle there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And you've been there 20 years. That's great.
20 years,
and now the hypnosis thing was one thing. You got into the hypnosis thing. But now you're talking about alternative, medicine. How did that begin? How did you become interested in that kind of wellness?
You know, once you learn that the mind has this ability to change our bodies, even, I mean, myself, I think of myself, I'm not on any medications, I feel good, life is okay, I'm not a big jock, but I'm really healthy, you know?
Yeah.
So I think to myself, why is that? Like one thing I learned as I did some what's called Zen therapy. It's called Rolfing actually, and it kind of elongates the body and gets you in good shape. Some people, as they get older, they start drooping a little bit. That's gravity pulls us down.
Right.
So I learned that. I learned Reiki. I learned acupuncture. I mean, I don't do it. I mean, I've learned it by using it.
Right.
But you ask a question of how did we get into that? I'm pretty fortunate. You know, I'm fortunate because I have this gift the skill, not gift, but skill of doing hypnosis. And so I'm able to afford an office, and many people cannot. So what I do is I rent office space to other practitioners who can't afford their own office.
Right.
So when you say how big is the staff, I don't pay anybody. They
right.
pay me.
I gotcha. You know, so right. Yeah. So, but it's dedicated to that
that's
to those
right.
kind of services.
All alternative wellness. We don't have psychotherapy there.
How long does it take to become a hypnotist? And do you get a license?
You get a certification.
A certification.
Illinois
okay.
doesn't have license. Some states have licensure. Mm-hmm. Illinois not yet. Monday, may they might.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on the instructor. We just had a class finish at our office. It's another thing we have is classes. And Dr. Funda Khan, a good friend of mine, has done a class, and it took her 20 weeks. So 20 weeks, 2 hours or 3 hours each week, plus independent study between classes.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had a group of students be certified through the National Guild of Hypnotists. And so there's an example. Some people take less, but it's still a certain amount of hours of independent study.
Mm-hmm. And what does it consist of? I mean, if you can briefly, I mean, I'm sure it's much
hypnosis
more complicated.
Or the class?
The class. What do you take? What do you do?
Yeah, it's interesting. If you think about hypnosis, I could teach you how to hypnotize somebody in 5 minutes, but then what do you do with it? You know, how do you talk to the person? What do you say?
Right.
So the classes are pretty thorough about how do you communicate to the person, because you communicate differently, like communicating to a little child.
Mm.
You speak slow. You give reassurance, you repeat things, and you really don't want to say something direct, like, you will not smoke cigarettes, because the brain would say, want to bet?
So
the idea is you find out why a person's smoking, and then you extract why they smoke, extract why they overeat. So those are the things they learn.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting. That really, really is interesting. And do you have any idea how many clients you've had over the years? Can you even round up the number?
You know, on a one-to-one, I currently see about 20, 25 people a week.
Wow.
Yeah. And I used to see more in my younger days.
Yeah.
Yeah. Earlier days. I won't even say younger.
Right.
Earlier days. No, I imagine 50, 60, 80,000. I don't know.
That's
who counts? You know, who
yeah.
counts?
Okay.
You know?
Well, Larry, hang on. We have to break for the news.
Thank you.
But Larry Garrett is with us, and he is the operator of the oldest and largest hypnosis center in Chicago at 3020 North Kimball Avenue. And he is the author of two books that detail the experience that he had in Iraq on September 11, 2001, while he was there to hypnotize Saddam Hussein's son. It's a fascinating story, and we'll get into that here. And it is 9/11, and we'll do some remembrance a little bit later as well. So we're going to take a break. We got the news coming up next here on WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Tuesday. That means 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in right now. We'll play them later. It's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. One artist, two songs. Get those in now. We are going to be remembering where we were when 9/11 happened, and we are going to be remembering where we were for other big events, world events. Coming up. And we are also going to talk about controversial TV episodes and episodes that were banned from being aired. So that's all coming up on the show. You can text us at 312-981-7200 for talk, text, 2 for Tuesday requests. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Our guest back again in studio here is world-renowned hypnotist Larry Garrett, operator of the oldest and largest hypnosis center in Chicago. He's the author of Healing the Enemy and Hypnotizing the Devil, which details the experience he had being in Iraq on September 11, 2001, hypnotizing Saddam Hussein's son. It's a fascinating story. And his wellness center is GarrettWellnessCenter.com for more information. We welcome Larry back. Hi, Larry.
Hi.
Okay.
Hey, Nick.
Listen, it's a fascinating story, obviously. We've talked about it before, and mm-hmm. we usually have you on or around September 11th.
I think you're the first show on the airwaves to talk about 9/11.
It is.
Right?
Absolutely. How did it come to be that you were called to Iraq to hypnotize Saddam Hussein's son? How did that happen?
That's how come I'm involved in this alternative stuff, because who has an answer for that? But I did get a phone call asking if I'd be interested in going to Iraq. Well, I'm not a big news person, so I'm really not aware of the fact that Iraq is a bad place to go at that time. Yeah, sounds like an interesting thing. And so I met with a neurologist from Baghdad who was here in Chicago for a medical conference. And we spent a couple hours talking about a patient of his. He never told me who it was.
Uh-huh.
Just a businessman who had had an accident, was having difficulty walking, but his medical staff determined it was all in his mind with his anxiety. Could I help him? And you know, I'm kind of a guy like a Nick DiGiulio. I could do anything, you know. So yeah, I could do that, yeah. So, I mean, I didn't say it like that. I'm just shortening right. it for the program. But we spent some time. I said, well, let me think about it. But I knew right away, you know, trip to Iraq, expenses paid. How could I say no?
Right. Mm-hmm. And so they reached out to you. How did they find you?
They probably says, now, who could we find that is probably the guy that'll take the most risks? I don't know. I have no idea. Here's what I assume. They did some research through the association I'm certified with.
The Hypnosis Association.
Yes.
Okay.
And so they were in Chicago. His medical person was in Chicago. And I'm you know, kind of a leader in my community. And
yeah.
they said, well, talk to Larry. You know, Larry, I'll talk to you about it. And I'm pretty open. You know, I am open about most things. I have less judgments as years have gone on and more openness. So I think that's how they sent them to me.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So tell me about now you went to Iraq twice in September of 2001?
No, I went there in April 2001.
Oh, in April. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah. Twice in 2001, in the year 2001. Yeah. Okay, so tell me about the first visit.
The first visit in April, that was a pretty exciting visit because I really didn't know who I was going to see.
They still didn't tell you?
They didn't tell me. They just said a businessman. And, you know, it was pretty exciting. It was almost like a James Bond movie. You know, we traveled at night because you can't travel. There was no fly zone, so we had to travel in a vehicle. And there was a Frenchman, an Iraqi, and a guy from Jordan who was driving, and myself. So we get to the border, you know, between Jordan and Iraq, and we go into this area they call No Man's Land, about 300 meters. And so we get there about 2 o'clock in the morning, and now we're detained, you know, by all these guards with guns and things. Very intimidating.
Now, did you ever start to think, as you were traveling along, here you are traveling at night, kind of incognito, here guys with rifles all over the place. Did you ever think, man, I think I'm going to meet somebody...
Yes.
Who might be dangerous or somebody who might be big.
Or important.
Or important. Right. Yeah. I mean, did that start to dawn on you?
Yeah, it did. It's like you don't come to the United States from another country thinking you're going to meet the president or something like that, right?
Right.
But my mind kept on flipping because I'm a pretty aware person, and it kept flipping into, why would a person go through all this to get an American hypnotist to go to Baghdad? And why don't you get an Iraqi hypnotist or an Iranian hypnotist?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking... guy must be pretty important. But the doctor told me, he says, an important businessman and his family are waiting for you. They will greet you, because I was a little scared now. Friends are saying, don't go. It's dangerous.
Right,
you'll get killed.
Right,
you'll never come back.
And
But it was a real exciting venture the first time, because then when I got there, it was 5 o'clock in the morning, so I tried to get a little sleep because we traveled all night. Who could sleep when you're traveling through Iraq, right?
Sure, of course.
500 miles from Amman, Jordan to Baghdad, and it's you know, the middle of the night. You're waiting for somebody to throw a log in front of the road and rob you, but everything was okay.
So when you got to the, didn't you go to the palace?
No, not the first time.
No.
The second or third day, I went to the palace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The first day, I met Uday Hussein for the first time. Now I'm finding out, because we had a big meeting, all of his medical staff, his bodyguards, his mentors. And now they're saying, well, would you like to see the medical records? Well, I can't read medical records, but I had to be cool, right? So he says, yeah, I'd like to see the medical records. So I take these up to my room and I look. And it's Uday Hussein I'm going to see.
That's when you found out, was when you got the medical records.
Oh, wow. Now what do I do?
Oh,
now,
man.
What do I do? Yeah. So that's how I found out. But now I'm there. So the exciting part of me wants to venture. I was a little bored at that time. You know, after a while, you know, if you sit on the radio for 48 years, you're going to say, something new needs to be going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was exciting. And that first trip, they treated me royalty. I went through Babylon. I went through the museums. I traveled the market. So I was treated well.
What were the sessions with him like?
They were. I think he was real nervous the first time. You know, can imagine us Americans. You know, sitting there whispering in your ear.
Did you have a translator in the room with you?
Did I have what?
A translator in the room with
no,
you?
No, he spoke English.
He spoke English. Okay.
Yeah. He spoke good English. He had studied in Oxford.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's
a
very intelligent guy.
Okay, all right.
I mean, he could have been the worst man in the world, because
some people think he is the worst man in the world.
Person in the world, you know, but objectively, he was a pilot. He was an engineer. He had great intelligence and great communication skills. He spoke with an accent, but that was okay.
Mm-hmm.
First time I hypnotized him, though, he was a little scared, a little nervous, didn't know what was going to happen. And he had about 20 people in a room. And so I kind of leaned over close and I said, you know, this isn't a theatrical position here.
Right.
This is serious. We don't need an audience. So he said something in Arabic and boom, everybody left except two people,
mm-hmm.
a medical guy and one of his closest people.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew I had control once I was able to get 18 people to walk out
the
room.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's how we started. And it was kind of scary. The first time I hypnotized him, he said, okay, he says, that was good, but next time must be better. Ooh.
Oh.
Ooh, I better perform here.
Yeah, you better.
So he did that to me a couple of times. Each time he'd say, next time's got to be better. And he had a personality that was intimidating at first.
Mm-hmm.
But once I got to know him, it was okay because we would spend hours talking about stuff
mm-hmm.
besides the hypnosis.
His issues, what were they specifically when you started to have sessions with him?
Yeah.
What came out? What was it?
His issues were, and as we spoke at the beginning of the program, his issues were that he had a hesitancy of putting his left foot to the ground because he had been shot multiple times. That's what his accident was, that they told me it was an accident, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was shot. So they had to reconstruct his left lower leg. And by reconstructing that, he was actually bedridden for over a year, I understand, that he couldn't put pressure on his left leg,
mm-hmm.
and it was mostly in his mind. He had two surgeons. He had a German surgeon and an Iraqi surgeon. The German surgeon says, you need to start walking as soon as possible to strengthen that leg. The Iraqi surgeon says, don't put pressure on the leg or you'll never walk again.
Mm.
So he had a double bind.
Right.
So he couldn't put pressure on the leg because of his fear of not walking. So he was kind of like in this damned if I do and damned if I don't kind of energy.
So you were there for how many days in April?
The first time, 10 days.
You were there for 10 days. Did you have sessions with him every day?
Every day.
Okay.
It was at night. It was at night.
At night. Okay.
So the subtitle of my book is Hypnotic Nights in Baghdad.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Exactly right. That's right. Yeah. And so when you left in April,
yes.
How did you leave him? What was it between you two?
The last session we had was during the day. That was the only time during the day. Everything else was at night. We left as kind of cordial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's okay.
Did he say, okay, I feel better now?
Well, the third time I hypnotized him, the third day, he was walking without a cane, without crutches.
Is that right?
Yeah, third day, yeah. And also he was able to go upstairs. His original abilities to go upstairs were 1 foot on the stair, and then he would drag the other leg.
Mm-hmm.
1 foot and drag the other leg.
And he was going up the stairs then.
Now the third day, he's going up the stairs okay, and he's walking without his cane. So we were doing stuff.
Yeah.
And you
still had 7 days with him after that.
Yeah, so I kept working. You know, yeah. I'm here every day. You know?
Okay.
Let's do something every day.
So that was in April.
Yes.
And then you came back in September because obviously you were in Iraq when the attacks took place in September 11th in 2001.
Yeah.
What brought you back there?
When I left the first time, my bodyguard says, most likely we'll see you again. I didn't know what that meant, but it's okay. And they said to me, when you go back, your government's going to want to talk to you. Don't lie to them. Tell them everything they want to know.
Mm.
And so I spent about 15 hours with the FBI and CIA when I came back with them asking me questions. What did I do? Where does he live? How far was it from the hotel? Things like that. And then in August, I got another phone call and saying, would I come back? And I said, yes, if I could bring my video camera and my computer, because both of those were contraband at the time.
Oh, I see.
And there were no cell phones in either in Iraq. So you were kind of limited.
And so, but they wanted you to come back for more treatment.
Yes, that was in August. They called me. So then, in August, we're preparing. When they call you, it's like a week or two or three later before you're leaving. So September 9th, I'm on a plane heading to Baghdad. Yeah, who knows what's going to happen 2 days from now?
Right.
And now I'm stuck in Baghdad until the 19th.
Yeah, and you were supposed to be there for how long?
10 days.
10 days, so, but then obviously you couldn't get out of there once the attacks took
place. When 9/11 occurred, Uday said to me, he says, well, we're going to have to send you back. It's not good for you to stay here. Okay, I didn't know what that meant. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge was, if you remember, there was a no-fly zone.
Absolutely,
So I couldn't leave. And he says, we could send you to Amman if you want, but you'll have to stay in a motel until it's time to leave. But easier to leave from Amman than from Baghdad. I thought, no, I know everybody here now. I've made friends. I've made acquaintances. You know, I didn't sit there just hypnotizing them. That was only a couple hours a night.
Right.
During the day, I'd go around socializing.
Right. And so let me ask you, what was the feeling like when first of all, how did you find out about the attacks?
Well, I was with a group of people that I had gotten together with and were watching TV. I did some videos a second time, so I have this on video.
Oh, you had video, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm videotaping the guy giving me a little story about the 1991 Iraqi war.
Right.
And then he starts yelling, oh, look at that, look at that, look at that. And he's showing me the TV with the tower falling down.
Right.
But it's all in Arabic, so I don't know what he said.
Yeah.
To me, it looked like a space movie, you know, a science fiction movie.
Yeah.
So I turn the camera to the screen, and I see in Arabic words on the bottom. I hear this guy on the TV yelling and screaming in Arabic. So then he starts explaining to me that that's 9/11.
Mm. So yeah. The attacks were happening at that time.
Yeah, that's how, and that was 6 p.m., their time.
Right. And so it was immediately like, well, you shouldn't be here in Iraq. Right, and then, of course, it was proven that Iraq had nothing to do with the attacks. At that time, nobody knew.
Yeah.
Nobody knew who did it or what was going on.
We should have told Bush that one.
Yeah.
I lost a good gig.
Yeah, I can imagine. but it's just, so that's how you experienced it, and then you stayed there longer. Were you able to get in contact with anybody here?
Yes, I was. And within an hour, I was driven to Uday's palace, and he was discussing with me they're going to try and get me home right away.
Yeah.
In the meantime, the phones in Iraq at the time were really antiquated, noisy, staticky.
Right.
$35 a minute, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't have to pay it, but
right.
I'm just saying, yeah.
Right.
So he says, we're going to make everything available to you. So I tried to get on the phone, hard to get on at first, and of course, family and friends were worried about me. Now they knew where I was and what I was doing. Then he gave me a shortwave radio because everything was in Arabic, so I could listen to BBC and hear them talking about 9/11. Mm-hmm. That was the only information I had.
That was the only information you had.
That's it.
Then what happened when you came back? Were you again? Did you have to go through the FBI and everything again one more time?
Yeah, I did. And this was a little
different. It had to be a little more intense, right?
Yeah, a little more intense.
Yeah.
And they met with me, and then they were going to bring some people in from Washington to meet with me and discuss. And then they wanted some DNA on Uday, you know, because all this stuff was starting. But it was a different kind of interrogation the second time.
Yeah, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm certain there was a lot more paranoia. People didn't know what was going on at that point.
So. And what I share with you is, of course, I say it objectively, it's a one-of-a-kind story because, you know, how many Americans were able to sit next to this guy?
Yeah.
You know, and he was terrified of Americans. He was terrified to leave his own country. He couldn't leave his own country.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, let's take a break, okay?
Okay.
Larry Garrett's with us, and that's an incredible story where he was hypnotizing Saddam Hussein's son and was stuck in Iraq after the 9/11 attacks. And Larry Garrett, we'll come back. We're going to talk a little bit more with Larry. And I want to recap the story about how Larry came here to work with Uncle Bobby. And we'll get all that story coming up here right after we take this break on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Coming up after the show here at 5 o'clock is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. At 6 o'clock is Steve Cochran with your morning drive. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. That's all coming up right here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We are talking with world-renowned hypnotist Larry Garrett, who operates the Garrett Wellness Center. It's the oldest and largest hypnosis center in Chicago, and he's the author of a couple of books, Healing the Enemy and Hypnotizing the Devil, detailing his experiences in Iraq, hypnotizing Saddam Hussein's son, and he just happened to be there when the 9/11 attacks took place. Larry, welcome back.
Honored to be here. Thank you, Nick.
Well, you've been associated with WGN in the past. Our good friend, the great Uncle Bobby Collins, was a smoker.
That's right.
And he came to you. How did that happen? How did you end up hooking up with Bobby?
1977.
Mm-hmm.
Long time. Yeah.
Long time, yeah.
And a client of mine had called in and was talking to him about hypnosis. And so he had called me then and just he asked me if he could come and see me and be hypnotized. And could I hypnotize him to quit smoking? I said, well, come and see me.
Mm-hmm.
And I always remember, I mean, it's easy to remember him because he was so vast.
Absolutely.
Personally, as well as on the air.
No, as soon as he walked into a room, he owned it.
You owned it. You're right. You're right.
Absolutely.
Good wording. Good.
Absolutely.
And so he wanted to be hypnotized. We talked for a while. You know, when I hypnotize people, I don't hypnotize people in the same room. They're seated in another room. I'm speaking through a microphone. They're wearing headphones.
Right.
And that's how I hypnotize people. And I always remember his words. And he says, Larry? I said, yes. He says, am I supposed to be nervous? Yeah, if you want. Okay, let's do it. So that's how we did it. So then what he really did, I have to tell you, he put me on the map. And the way he did that was he came back the next day. At that time, he was on the afternoon drive show.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And he said to me, it's his audience. He says, well, yesterday was my last cigarette, and when I don't smoke for 3 weeks, I'll tell you how I did it.
Mm-hmm.
So the next day, he says, 2 days without a cigarette. When it's 3 weeks, I'll tell you. 3 days, and he kept doing this every day.
Every day for 3 weeks.
That's right.
Yeah.
And he's building the momentum.
When people are like, well, how did he quit?
And so then the third week, he had me on his program and says, now I want you to meet the person who helped me quit smoking. I haven't smoked in 3 weeks. And so then, of course, my phone rang off the wall for the next 20 years.
I bet.
20 years at least.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, well, when you get the approval from Bob Collins, that's a big, big thing.
He was a tight.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. Bob was a tough, a tough shell to crack. There's no question about it. But like when you get the approval from Bob, that's a big deal. Yeah. And you know what? I mean, in the time where, you know, if you're going back to 1977, and people who are young now don't realize that in 1977, everybody smoked.
Everybody smoked. We'd be smoking right here while we're talking.
Exactly. Yes. There were ashtrays everywhere. People were smoking in emergency rooms and hospitals.
You're right.
And so like that makes it even more difficult to quit. Because now, you know, you have to stand outside if you want to have a cigarette. You can't smoke. And so smokers have a lot more boundaries to deal with when they can and where they can smoke. But in the 70s, like I said, everybody smoke everywhere. Yeah. So that's even more impressive that Bob Collins, who was a smoker, would do that.
And you know, when a person like him kind of leads a show, hypnosis is 90% expectation, you know, and so when somebody says, well, how long have you been doing hypnosis, they already assume I know what I'm doing, you know. That doesn't mean I do.
Right.
I always say, I don't know everything, but I've been around the block a few times.
Right, I gotcha.
Yeah.
That's great. So now tell everybody about how they can come in, and either that or they can, because you can also do it electronically, correctly? Tapes and things like that.
The tapes are obsolete, right?
Oh, they
when a person comes in to see me, we sit down and we spend about 2 hours together,
mm-hmm.
and we talk about why they're here, what they're going to do, and then I hypnotize them for about an hour, and I hypnotize them, as I say, through microphones. They're wearing headphones. They're not even in the same room.
Right.
But often, like I spoke to a woman yesterday from Michigan, so I'm going to make her a recording, and then I'll send her a recording online
and pick. Yeah. People can do it that way. They can, if they want to have that.
Sure.
Okay. And in the website for all this information is Garrett, G-A-R-R-E-T-T, like the popcorn.
Yes, like the popcorn. No relationship.
But there you go. Wish it was. GarrettWellnessCenter.com. GarrettWellnessCenter.com to set up a connection with Larry or one of the people that are there. And also, again, you offer all kinds of wellness there.
Yes, we do.
That people can do.
Think about something alternative, we probably have it.
And all of that is.
We have the best around.
And all of that is detailed at GarrettWellnessCenter.com.
Yes, it is.
And it's located in Chicago at 3020 North Kimball. And the number is 773-395-6100. 773-395-6100. And it's the oldest hypnosis center and wellness center in Chicago. Mm-hmm. GarrettWellnessCenter.com. Well, and your books, are they available? Is Healing the Enemy?
Only through us. Not even Amazon. You know, it's almost as though they've been kind of like blacklisted a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. It's an interesting, it's a fascinating story. And you know, it gets to think about where you were and what was happening in September 11th. It's a very unique and
good story.
A lot of
pictures in the book, too.
A lot of pictures in the book. I've got the books at home, and they're both really good. Yeah. So it's Healing the Enemy and Hypnotizing the Devil, with the experience of September 11th in Iraq, Hypnotizing Saddam Hussein's Son. Larry, always a pleasure to have you on, man.
Thank you, Nick.
It is great. You do
Thank
great
you.
Work. And it's
I'm
good.
Honored
it's,
to be here. Hopefully I'll see you next year.
Hey, you got it.
Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. That's Larry Garrett, everybody. Check out GarrettWellnessCenter.com for more information. We got the news coming up next here on WGN.